Now, is there anyone here that can tell me why most alligators are abnormally aggressive?
I know the answer to this question. Raise your hand.
Anybody? Anyone? Yes or you, sir?
Mama says that alligators are ornery because they got all them teeth but no toothbrush.
Your mama said alligators are ornery because they got all them teeth and no toothbrush. Wow. Anybody else? Yes, a user.
Alligators are aggressive because of an enlarged medulla oblongata. It's the sector of the brain which controls aggressive behavior.
That is correct. The medulla oblongata.
But mama said...
The medulla oblongata is where anger, jealousy, and aggression come from. Now, is there anybody here can tell me where happiness comes from?
No.
Anyone?
All right. Let's hear what Mama has to say on the subject.
Mama say that happiness is from magic rays of sunshine that come down when you're feeling blue.
Well, folks, Mama's wrong again.
Hope he didn't kill somebody.
Lights, camera, action. Welcome back to another episode of Happy Hour Films. As you all know, I am Ross Bacon, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Mike McGuigan. Mike, say hi.
How's everyone doing?
And as you should know by now, we are a podcast that cracks open a beer and we talk about some movies. Now, tonight we are continuing our sports month with week two. And last week was baseball. This week is going to be football. So we're going to talk about Rudy, the water boy, and the replacements. And we're also going to talk about Necessary Roughness because it's basically the replacements from 1991. And we're also going to talk, I'm going to at least talk about the program in Varsity Blues because they are the same as well.
I watched Varsity Blues and the program I didn't watch entirely, but I did watch clips. So I should be able to talk about it a decent amount.
The program is essentially, well, Varsity Blues, because it came second, is the program, but for high school football.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. But, all right, so, and just in case this does sound odd or I sound a little subdued, it's because I'm in a hotel room in Boston right now, and I don't necessarily know if there's anybody next door to us, but I don't want to get too insane and have them complain. But just keep in mind, this will still be a normal episode of Happy Hour Films. We will be talking about, I don't know, guys jerking off in movie theaters or maybe Professor Liam Neeson. Who knows? But before we do any of that, we got to talk about what we're drinking. So, Mike, what do you got?
All right. So, I went to Bonesaw Brewing, and I got Irish Queen, because what is Rudy if not an Irish Queen?
Yes. Yes, he is. He's an absolute Irish Queen. I absolutely do that.
I mean, the movie Rudy jerks off Notre Dame so much. And I just felt like this was an appropriate, like, I have nothing against the Notre Dame program. I'm not a fan of them in terms of football, but whatever. And I felt like this was an appropriate blow to the ego if you watched Rudy.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, fuck that movie. And we'll get into it.
So, but, it's really good. It's an Irish coffee cream ale. Now, I'm not usually a big coffee fan, but this is somehow maintaining a beer flavor while still reminding me of Irish cream. Okay. Bonesaw Brewing is one of my favorites in the area. And I'm looking for the alcohol content. 4.7.
Nice.
And I really enjoy it. I do.
Nice. Yeah, they're Bonesaw's good. But all right, so me, on the other hand, I'm obviously not drinking a New Jersey beer tonight because I'm up in Massachusetts. But so I'm drinking El Dorado Cutting Tiles from Trillium Brewery. Now, Trillium is actually like right up the street from where our hotel is. It's this nice, like, fairly cool little beer garden. There's like a rooftop bar and everything like that. It's
what area
nice
are you staying in?
We're in the Intercontinental.
Okay.
And we're right, like, our back harbor is where the Boston Tea Party was.
Sick.
So it's that's where, like, the museum is and everything. It's pretty cool. But, yeah, this place is a cool little place. Their beers are okay, but they all look identical. like every beer that came out that my wife and I had were looked exactly the same, but they weren't apparently. And like we were tasting each other's beers, and it's like, wow, that it tastes very similar. So it's kind of like the Simpsons gag with like dry, Duff, Duff dry, and extra dry, and it's all three different tubes coming out of the same pipe.
Yeah.
So like I was kind of thinking about that, but this is a double IPA with raw wildflower honey, and it's 8.5%. And since I have been basically drinking all day, I will probably be taking this one fairly slowly. So I don't know how many of the four pack I will be getting to, but we'll see what happens.
Oh, and mine is a 6-pack of 12-ounce cans, not a 4-pack of 16-ounce cans.
Nice. Yeah, and then when we went to Fenway to see the Red Sox, obviously, and they lost to the Phillies in a beatdown, which sucked. But they had a really good beer there. It was called 617, and it was a really cool, like, brew for the brewery, like, you know, for the stadium brewed beer. It was really good.
That's with Universal. Every time someone brings up that Simpsons scene, Universal has Moe's Bar, and yeah, they have all different kinds of Duff. I'm like, I wonder if they're actually different or if they're all the same thing.
That would be the best. Like, because, if you make that the actual gag.
Because, like, on the one hand, that's like, oh, that's a cheap business practice. On the other hand, it's so appropriate.
Yeah, it's just completely perfect. You know, just keep it really true to the show. That'd be awesome. But yeah, but literally, I think if we had gone into like the brewery aspect of Trillium instead of sitting in their beer garden, we probably would have seen like one vat, one pipe, and it would have been going to six different beers. But yeah, it's not bad. It's okay. I enjoy it. But so why don't we get into our football talk? Football.
All right, we're gonna get Ross's hate boner out of the way first.
So that means we're gonna be talking about Rudy from 1993, directed by David Anspaugh, who is Hoosiers, 10 episodes of Hill Street Blues, 9 episodes of St. Elsewhere, and this goddamn movie. Oh, I fucking hate this movie. I fucking hate this movie. There is no reason for anyone to ever enjoy watching this movie. And
like, this movie is almost entirely jerking off Notre Dame football and then just trying to get sentiment across. Like, that is the entirety of this movie. Now, I don't hate it on the same level Ross does. Like, I think in terms of like competency of making a movie, like, it's fine. There's nothing explicitly wrong with how the movie's made, except for a 2-minute long scene where they're playing the Notre Dame fight song that I just wanted to blow my fucking brains out.
Yeah, it's, I mean, they're this goddamn movie. But my big, obviously, filmmaking wise, it's a perfectly serviceable film. It's perfectly fine,
and the performances are decent. Like, I'm not gonna knock the acting in it very much.
Well, see, this is where like Sean Astin, like, that was obviously, this is like his breakthrough role.
Yeah.
And he plays Rudy like he has no emotions. Like, you would think that this guy, the only time this guy gets fired up is when he's quoting, like, he's quoting that, I forget, I think it's Newt Rockne, is that motivational speech or whatever that he gets up on the chair and he says or whatever. But like, every other time they show him, and the only things out of his mouth are nothing but Notre Dame.
Yeah.
It would be a fucking nightmare to know this guy. Like, it's the only, and you can just, with his brother, who's a complete asshole the whole time, like, I totally side with him. I'm like, yes, yes, shut the fuck up, Rudy. We don't give a shit about Notre Dame anymore. We're all in our 40s, you know. You are, and that's the thing, like, with him going to college, he's like 25 by the time he gets to Notre Dame. It's like,
yeah, he should doesn't,
be out
he
of does, college at that point.
He doesn't go to college right out of high school. And then, like, at 22 or something, he decides to go to junior college trying to get into Notre Dame. Where the junior college is where we meet John Favreau.
Favreau. Johnny Favreau.
This is definitely the second best of the two films we are going to be talking about with him in it this week.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. And yeah, D-Bob, I think, is that character's name. What a weird-ass name.
Now,
but you know who else is in this movie? Good old Vincent Vaughn.
Yeah.
He was credited as Vincent Vaughn.
I mean, now, like, Charles S. Dutton is, he's a good mentor, I think, in
Rock.
This movie.
Rock, yeah.
He's the best part of the movie, I would say.
He's like the only one who's an actual character. Mm-hmm. You know, Rudy sucks. There's everything wrong with him is everything wrong with like that type of person. They're like, they don't shut up about one specific thing all the time. And to me, it's a psychosis. Like, it is a borderline mental illness with this guy, his obsession with Notre Dame. Monica Seles, a stalker, you know, the one that stabbed her at Wimbledon, was less dedicated as a stalker to than Rudy is to Notre Dame, you know. It's fucking ridiculous how much he is all about Notre Dame. And that's the thing, like, his dad, Ned Beatty, rest in peace, that whole family like loves Notre Dame, but they do it in like a fan, like in like a live in the South Bend area kind of fanboy way, or like a fan way. But yeah, Rudy is a goddamn stalker. And
like, I know Clemson fanboys, I know Penn State fanboys. If you're watching football, they'll get annoying, trust me.
Oh yeah.
But they recognize, you know, the other months of the year that's not football season.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. And I obviously you can wear apparel that's from like a college you didn't go to or that you're just a fan of or whatever. Rudy lives in this Notre Dame jacket that his best friend, his dead best friend, gives him. Like, I could almost understand it, but it wasn't his boyfriend. You know, it was just his good friend that got blown up in a factory explosion. But he wears this thing all the time. And he says he showers in like the gym or something. So like, you know, he's not showering every day. You know, so I can't imagine what that coat smells like, especially after having like charred guy on it.
And like, I like Sean Astin. I do. Lord of the Rings, I'm there for it. The Goonies. The Goonies was his breakout role. Like,
I don't know. I would say it's this, because like, everybody knows Rudy, you know?
The Goonies.
Well, you got to figure in the grand scheme of like movies, Rudy's much more influential in the sense that it's your stereotypical like sports underdog movie.
I don't know, because like movie theaters a lot of times will do like certain days where they'll show like a classic movie, and I've seen The Goonies on those lists a couple times. I've never seen Rudy on those lists.
Probably because by now people realize that like showing Rudy to young people is not a healthy thing to do. You know, because they might actually want to be like this selfish fucking prick, you know. Oh god. And then like, just to sum up how shitty this kid is, he cries when he finally gets, okay, for one, I think he even just gets into Notre Dame because they just want him to stop applying. Like, it's kind of like they don't want to pay the legal fees to get the restraining order, so they just let him in, you know? He cries when he gets the acceptance letter for all of 30 seconds. And then he goes and tells his dad and his brothers at the factory that he got in, but he does it almost like, so I got into Notre Dame. Okay, I'm going to go to Notre Dame. And then Ned Beatty and his brothers are kind of, it's the best, because the brothers even like, congrats. You know, that's about as heartfelt and excited as he gets. He's just like, congrats. It's like, great. Yeah, fucking great, Rudy. Just get the fuck out of our face, you goddamn psycho.
And then the scene where they're doing practices and the guy gets mad at Rudy for, he's like, he's playing like the Super Bowl. And the coach is like, if you had half the heart, I'm like, no, you, like, there are your practices where you go all out, but you don't go all out. Like, if Rudy could have, he probably would have hurt that guy if he had the actual athletic ability.
Okay, Rudy, I want to know how many concussions he has.
Yeah.
Because he spends, 2 years on the practice squad getting the goddamn hell beat out of him, and he is bloody all the time, and there is no way he doesn't have 50 concussions.
No, he's not a good role model. They shouldn't show this to kids.
No, absolutely not. Especially, I mean, the only thing you can take away from this is the general idea of wanting to be persistent and like having a goal and wanting to
not quitting,
right? And not, but which is what Rudy does at the end of this goddamn movie. He quits, and then he has to have like the motivational speech of like, somebody tells him like, no, go back there and finish it off. But then like the seniors, now this is the funny part about the real life story of this. obviously, and Rudy admit, the real Rudy admits this, like the chanting never happened and the seniors laying their jerseys on the desk never happened. He fully admits that that's, you know, made for the movie. Mm-hmm. But then there's the funniest part, which is Joe Montana was on this team at the time. And he says that the carrying Rudy off the field part was sarcastic. You know, it was like the two biggest pranksters on the team were the ones that were like, let's fucking pick him up and carry him off the field. How fucking funny would that be? And apparently that's, according to Joe Montana, what really happened. Now, according to Rudy, it was obviously, you know, I'm the greatest, because that guy's apparently a quote unquote likable asshole, I think is what somebody called him. Or like likably abrasive, I think is what he's called.
I didn't look that much into the real story.
Well, most of the time with stories like this, it's either heartbreakingly true, or it's complete bullshit. And a story like this very much could be complete bullshit.
That's like, I mean, it's like Sully. They basically had to make up half of the conflict that actually happened in Sully because they're like, he landed the plate safely. What is there to do about this?
Exactly. Now, when you just said Sully, it took me a second because I'm sitting in South Boston right now. I was like, what Sully from South Boston? Like, who the fuck is Mike talking about? Oh, right, Sullenberger. I'm picturing some like fucking mook out there with a Patriots hat on, just like, you know, yelling about having his chowder. Yelling about how he knows one of the lesser known Wahlbergs, you know, is trying to leverage a free burger out of Wahlbergs for that.
How knowing any Wahlberg besides Mark Wahlberg isn't that much. Well, yeah, I know Donnie Wahlberg.
It's like, wow, congrats. I've been to that shop right too. You know,
I saw two once.
Yeah, I know that scene in The Sixth Sense. I get it.
I mean, Band of Brothers is good, but.
Yeah, I mean, New Kids on the Block. Yeah, everyone knows them. But yeah, there's, I don't know how much I can keep saying how much this movie sucks without getting real animated and like pissing off the people in the rest of my hotel.
Ross hates this movie the way I hate Jared Leto.
Exactly. It's just because he's so unlikable. You know, there is nothing likable about this kid. And it's simply for the fact that it'd be one thing if, like, yeah, he's a role model to people to not give up. I acknowledge that. I get it. But his personality is just so anti-likable, you know, unlikable.
Do you know what would have made this movie 100% worth watching?
If he gets shot in the head at the end?
They put him in the game one play. It's like an onside kick. He catches it and immediately gets wrecked. The ball goes up in the air. The other team grabs it and runs in for a touchdown.
Exactly, because that's fucking what would happen. That is what would happen. I mean, when you say they show some of these monsters on Notre Dame, these guys are like 6'10" and like 300 pounds.
He ha-ha Clinton dicks it in like the Green Bay game, or it hits off his helmet and Seattle recovers and goes on to beat Green Bay.
Or he gets hit so hard, it's like the end of Necessary Roughness when like his face mask flies off and his mouth is crazy bloody.
Or you get the guy from, oh God, now Necessary Roughness and the replacements are running together. Which one has, I think it's The Replacements that has the samurai, No,
the samurai was Necessary Roughness.
Necessary Roughness.
He's the analog to Jon Favreau's character.
Yeah.
And we'll get into the fact that these movies are exactly the same shortly in a couple minutes.
A guy just runs up and karate chops Rudy right in the throat.
Just like in the water, but he like jumps and like full on double kicks him in the face and like with his cleats.
Man, if only Rudy was played by Jared Leto, then we could be bonding over this hatred.
Dude, my God. But do you know how much of like a weird ass like method acting performance that would be? You know, how even more intolerable that would be.
Jared Leto slept in the locker room of Notre Dame football for...
He actually slept in the costume of the Fighting Irishman. the little Irishman. He actually lived as the mascot for a season. But yeah, I mean, again. I mean, I didn't necessarily want to talk about this movie in the first place, but I feel like we kind of had to. But
it's hard to do football and not mention Rudy. I mean, like, we're not bringing up Remember the Titans, which is another one that. Now, I don't. Ross hates it. I don't hate it. I like the movie.
I can't stand it. I just can't stand it. It's maybe because with football movies in general, there are two things about football movies that are guaranteed to be in every movie, regardless if it's a comedy or if it's supposed to be serious. There's either going to be one, there's going to be cartoonishly bad hits that are like illegal. You know, there are like penalties for all of these tackles. And we'll discuss it the most in Waterboy, obviously, and Replacements. But because Rudy, to its credit, that they kind of gets the football part right.
Yeah.
You know, like the actual game itself is played like a normal
football. That is the credit to Rudy, is it is a competently made movie.
Yeah, and it takes the care to get the sport right too.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas a lot of other football movies are very much like, you can knock a guy's head off and the ref will be like, carry on, you know? But then,
yes, that was an unnecessary roughness. You're like, how are you going to call that? That was a clean kick to the face, Smith.
Right. Exactly. But then the other thing is, in this movie, and Remember the Titans, though, and it's probably because I hate when movies get real sappy, and especially when it's sports movies. Because, yes, there is a part in Major League, one of my favorite baseball movies of all time. And I love baseball. It's my favorite sport of all time ever, and I love it to death. But in baseball movies that are super sappy, I fucking hate them. I'm like, that's not the sport. You know, you're very much being very nostalgic right now for a time when you were a child and you loved baseball. You know, that's just stupid. Why don't we play it like it's supposed to happen in this movie? Football, on the other hand, is the same way, except it's weirdly like hero worship when it comes to football, because Rudy is literally carried off the field at the end of this like he's a god for sticking with it and playing 20 seconds and getting a gimme sack at the end of this movie. You know, his sack is so inconsequential, it's hilarious, but they treat it like he's LT breaking Joe Theismann's legs, you know. But
this movie is 100% sentiment. It is just,
it's sugar. If you can get cavities watching this movie, it's fucking gross.
And it's just, you know, getting on its knees ready to blow off the Notre Dame football program.
Well, but that's the thing. That's the weirdest thing. In the early 90s, because like Lou Holtz was the coach and they were like doing their national championship runs, all that, everybody for some reason was a Notre Dame football fan. And I honestly couldn't tell you why. I don't know why. Because Notre Dame is one of the most elite, exclusive, you know, white, you know, colleges out there. And the football program is so revered, probably because old white men love it, you know?
You also get the Irish crowd and the Catholic crowd.
Yeah, and those two go one in the same.
And the Irish Catholic crowd.
Irish Catholics, yeah.
Coming from the Irish Catholic, McGuigan.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Mike's right up there too. But the cult of Notre Dame absolutely paid for this movie. And they paid to have this be the greatest thing of all time for Notre Dame football. And it sickens me.
And it's funny because Notre Dame's program has not been very good in recent years.
No, didn't they get to the national championship a couple years ago and just get destroyed by like Alabama or something?
Yeah.
But like a real dynasty football
team. Well, no, it's funny because now they're like, I think it's Colin Cowherd or someone talked about it, where he's like, why would these athletes go to Notre Dame if they, like, I mean, other programs, they could just get by with like gimme work. Notre Dame is actually a hard academic program. Why are you going to go there when you could go to Bama, do nothing, and be on a better team?
Speaking of that, that's kind of the theme of the program.
Yeah.
But we'll get there. But yeah, it's, oh boy, I hate this movie. But yeah, I don't think we need to keep saying we fucking hate it.
I don't particularly hate the movie. I don't like it. I'm kind of indifferent about it. Like, there are things that I think are decent about it, but there's a lot that I'm just like, come on, get on with it.
Yeah, let's move it on here. Yeah, maybe we don't spend 4 hours like of him trying to be on the booster squad, you know? Come on. He even goes on a little rant about like the kind of paint they use in the helmets. It's like, fuck you. The people at Notre Dame and head of the football program don't know that shit. Like, why do you goddamn yeah. stalker, you know? But
God, and again, like the amount of hits he's taken, dude has CTE.
Absolutely. There is no brain left in that head. But
I mean, he had a speech impediment before reading. Is it a reading issue?
Yeah, he's dyslexic, apparently.
Dyslexic. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's back. Like, he apparently got tutored where he man, his brain's all the work John Favreau did to help him get into Notre Dame. Gone.
Yeah, he's speaking in pictures now. That's about it. But all right. So, I mean, that's enough of Rudy. Fuck that movie.
Yeah.
I fucking hate that movie. But so how's your bone saw, Mike?
Just finished my first can. Yeah. It is delicious. I love this one. And I'm not a coffee drinker, and it does kind of taste like coffee, but.
Yeah, bone saw's a good one. No, I don't think I've had a bad one from them.
Yeah, and I mean, like 4.7%, I could probably, if I cared to, I could probably run through this six pack in this episode. Oh,
yeah. Absolutely. Well, yeah, I was going to say, what did you say? It was 4.3 or something?
4.7.
4.7. Yeah, it's well under. That's that's like, you know, Bud Light level.
But, slightly above, but we're closer to Blue Moon level.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. All right, yeah, my Eldorado Cutting Tiles from Trillium Brewery in Massachusetts up here in Boston.
Baston.
But
we should have been talking about the padded.
And if we should have, yeah. We could sit in Southie right now. We could be recording in some junk like crack house. but yeah, so yeah, my beer's good. Again, 8.5%. I'm taking it nice and slow with it. But so now we get on to probably, I think, for the official three to we'll watch, my favorite. And it shouldn't be, but it's the Waterboy of 98.
Yeah, you're the one that put Adam Sandler on your hate list. So this is very much in the period where Adam Sandler was funny.
Exactly. This is probably, I'd probably say this is one of his last funny ones. Like, he's actually like watchable ones.
Like, you know, what? This is what, 98?
This is 98. Yeah. So it's like right around the same time as Big Daddy, I think.
Big Daddy's like 2002, I think.
No, I think it might be before this. Because Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore were the early
99. Big Daddy's 99. I think Mr. Deeds is 2002.
Yeah, that's where it really went down. You know, that's where shit went to hell. But, you know, of course, this is directed by Frank Caracci, and he's the wedding singer. He's got some credits here. We've already talked about one of them. Wedding Singer, Around the World in 80 Days, Click, Here Comes the Boom, Blended, Ridiculous 6, and the one we talked about, Zookeeper.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this guy is not – he's an Adam Sandler director is what he is. You know, he's probably one of Sandler's buddies. He's actually I think he's Sandler's dad at the end of this. He's Bobby Boucher's dad, Roboito, at the end of this movie.
Roboito.
But to whom it may concern. there's so many. Okay, well, we'll get it out of the way first. The fact that this movie obviously makes the main character very neurodiverse, special needs, whatever you want to call him, and he's still our hero. It obviously, the most of the jokes use the R word. He's called retarded numerous times in this, and it's not, you know, as in flame retardant kind of thing, but it's rough. That is rough. And then of course there's his stupid voice that he does with this. It's the typical Adam Sandler stupid goofy voice. But then we get Henry Winkler and Kathy Bates, who are so above this movie.
They are so amazing in it, though.
I was going to say, but they are perfect in this movie.
When Henry Winkler drops his pants to show the tattoo.
I can't even remember. Who's the tattoo of?
It'll come to me.
Is it like Elvis Costello or some shit?
I don't think so.
Can't remember. Oh, it's Roy Orbison. That's right. Yeah, yeah. My wife is sitting behind me on the bed trying to make as little noise as possible, and she whispered, Roy Orbison.
What mama don't know won't hurt her.
That's right. And he says it so, like, menacingly, too. It's kind of like...
Henry Winkler has, like, Henry Winkler might have 7 of my 10 favorite moments in this movie. That being one of them. The other is when he's talking to his mom or his grandmom, and the phone is disconnected, and he's wearing high heels.
For what reason, though?
I hate him.
Like, the joke right there is not exactly sensitive to, you know, like, cross-dressers or drag queens or whatever, but it's still, for some reason, because it's Henry Winkler, and that's not the joke. Like, the joke is
I think the joke is supposed to be more along the lines of Norman Bates' Psycho.
Exactly. But
what if Psycho was a football coach instead of a murderer?
What if Norman Bates had an interest in college football instead? And he was just really gifted at coming up with super plays, you know, great plays. But
and the number 3 moment with Henry Winkler is Gatorade.
Gatorade. Water sucks. And of course, there's, you know, with the whole thing with this movie is one of the biggest things that football comedies do, and it's the slobs versus snobs.
Yeah.
Now we have our nothing Louisiana. Is what Louisiana State or is Louisiana Tech? It's not LSU. So I think it's Louisiana Tech, which is an actual school.
The Mud Dogs.
Right. It's a fictional Bayou college, you know.
Yeah.
And, of course, they're playing, like, the LSU-level college that they're playing. They're playing the big program, Red Bayou's program or whatever. But this is absolutely a slobs versus snobs movie. And it has all of the tropes that every football movie has. And again, like slobs versus snobs, we have the player with the secret talent or whatever, the super crazy plays. And then, of course, we have the biggest football movie trope and like stereotype of all, or cliche, which is the star player some reason can't play in the first half of the big game.
Yeah.
And then they come back at halftime and make their triumphant return. And of course the team turns around and wins the game. It happens in The Replacements as well.
Now, I also love Lawrence Gilliard as the kicker, because one of the best moments is at the end of the game where he's like, visualize it. He visualizes the football as a KKK head and he just kicks.
Yeah, right.
That is fantastic.
And that's the thing. Like, they're like that. That's where like the little hints of like Sandler being funny kind of come in. Like little shit like that. It's like, of course, that's what a guy in the deep South would envision, you know.
And now that's not. I don't think Sandler is an unfunny person. I just think he doesn't care anymore.
Oh, absolutely, he doesn't give a shit anymore. But like again, this was like the last remnants of when he did care, you know. Mm-hmm. But, and of course, and we have to mention her because she's great. She's one of my favorite 90s actresses, Fairuza Balk.
Yeah, yep. She was.
Fairuza Balk is fucking great.
My favorite moment with her is when he's taking the test and she holds up the sign, do you want me to kill them?
You want me to kill them? Yeah.
You just see Sandler shake his head like, no. She told me her boobies and I like them too.
From Vicky Valancourt, yeah. But yeah, she holds the knife to the one guy's throat, like when he gets to threaten Bobby. Yeah, she's.
I love my mama very much. Now you know that.
What's the one thing she's like? Hey, baby, what are you doing here? And she's like, well, I'm thinking about stealing LT's Porsche. Then they do. She steals his Porsche, and he's riding the lawnmower like 3 miles an hour next to her. And of course, there's also Clint Howard. Clint Howard shows up in this movie.
That's a Joe Mantegna.
I am not what you'd call a handsome man. It's such a great line.
This movie's easily the most quotable. This might be the most quotable movie we have discussed in a while.
Absolutely, because everything's the devil, and you know, the devil. But and of course, Lawrence Taylor with the best line. Gentlemen, which brings me to my next point. Don't smoke crack.
And now with if you're not caught up with Loki, but the alligator Loki, Why are alligators so ornery? Because they got all them teeth and no toothbrush.
That's right, exactly. Well, let's see what Mama has to say with Colonel Sanders.
That's one of my all-time favorite running gags in the movie is Colonel Sanders getting hit in the head.
Be like terrified of Bobby.
I love the sound. He's like, arr! As soon as he gets hit in the head.
It's so good. It's absolutely so good. Then, of course, oh God, I can't remember who it is. But when Kathy Bates is faking her illness and being in a coma or whatever she's faking at the end, when they're watching television together, and Bobby's like, "Look, Mama, look who's on TV, the devil," because everybody's the devil to her. Yeah. I can't remember who it is.
And now, something to be said with the issues with mental issues. Bobby Boucher is less of a man child, I feel like, than Happy Gilmore and Adam Sandler.
Yeah, I could see that. And
maybe not. Yeah. I feel like Happy Gilmore by the end is, but definitely Billy Madison.
Oh, absolutely. That's the whole point of Billy Madison is the fact that he doesn't grow up, you know?
Yeah.
But with Happy Gilmore, it's just he's a dick that kind of falls in love with the chick from Julie Bowen, the chick from Modern Family now. But it's in this one, Bobby, if anything, is just like, he knows who he is. He knows what he's capable of. And then it's like when he does learn it, he's a great football player. When he gets motivated, he makes him a little bit better.
Now that does raise the question, why have that aspect of the character in the movie at all? Like, it doesn't.
I think it's because A, it was 1998.
Yeah.
And B, Adam Sandler had to do a silly voice. So the other jokes naturally follow, since obviously Sandler's never been the most mature comedian. The jokes have to be that Bobby is special in some way, or, you know, retarded at the time, which would have been the classification. But it has to be, because there's no other way to do it other than that's the way you can make him to warrant the voice, the living with his mother, to all that kind of stuff.
And he did the same exact voice in one of his most recent movies, Hubie Halloween.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, pretty much.
Of course, because it's the Adam Sandler voice. Like, it's just when everyone does a Sandler impression.
I guess at this point, Adam Sandler can just do that voice without any justification. People just be like, yep, it's Adam Sandler doing that voice.
Yeah, it's almost as if, like, when they hear his real voice, they're like, wait, what is this?
Yeah.
what character is this you're doing? You know, but, yeah, this this movie, it's one of those football comedies, too, that is like it's because it's such an outrageous comedy that, like, the crazy hits and shit, those are punchlines.
Yeah.
You know, so it makes sense.
Needle dick.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, the quarterback, is that Joe Dante, not John Dante or whatever? I think his name is Dante.
I have the IMDb page up. He's one of Peter Dante.
That's what. Yeah, Joe Dante is a famous director.
Though I do love Jonathan. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Loren. The guy with the
cross-eyed guy. Yeah. And of course, there's Blake Clark that we mentioned last week.
Yes.
Yeah. He's the coach. He's one of the coaches.
I love. He's like, I can only imagine what the team's doing alone with Farmer Fran's supervision. He has like pierced nipples.
They're like riding each other and all that. Like the cheerleader. I love the running gag of the drunk ass cheerleaders. Cheerleaders are always like drunk and completely like fucked up all the time.
And then you got Rob Schneider as the "You Can Do It" guy.
Absolutely, you can do it. Cut his fucking head off. Yeah. So, yeah, he's a good one. And then, of course, now that's the thing with this movie. Every football movie always has, like, the opposing team as the villain and from our heroes. And in this one, the actor that plays Red is, like, cartoonishly evil.
Yeah.
But it's not, like, a good cartoonishly evil. It's almost like an afterthought, you know? It's kind of like, oh, wait, he's got to be the bad guy. I mean, he's got to be from Louisiana.
And there's very few people that, like, realistically, like, 80% of the football team that Bobby plays for could be considered bad guys because they only like him when he's good at football.
Oh, they absolutely hate him to start.
And except for the kicker.
Right, yeah. Which is weird because, you know, do Division I football teams routinely make fun of the guy that gets them their water? I don't think so. I think if anything, the water boy would be the guy that would be like, hey, this guy's, you know, we don't want him to piss in our water, so maybe we shouldn't be an asshole to him. And it's Jerry Reed. He's been in all kinds of stuff. Smoking the Bandit, and he's in a bunch of stuff. But yeah, he was apparently his own mama's family as well. But he was a fairly decent actor from what I understand, but he's not good in this movie at all.
And then who's the guy on the other team that he's like, Meanie? You sound like a choo-choo train.
Is it Meanie? You know,
yeah, I think
the
it
villain
is.
Whose literal last name is Meanie.
another one of my favorite moments involving both Henry Winkler and Kathy Bates is when they're eating the snake and he's like, now what part of the snake do you think that is? He's like, I'd say it's the knee.
Right. Such a good scene. Just like, just the way that Kathy Bates delivers some of her lines, you can tell that she's like, you know what? I'm just going to have fun. I'm just going to have fun.
And when Kathy Bates tackles Roberto at the
Roberto.
End. Roberto. Yeah,
good old Roberto. Changed his name to Roberto. But yeah, I mean, oh yeah, there's so, and this is, it's weird because this is such a like Adam Sandler movie too. And it's, again, it's one of the generation of like fairly decent Sandler movies and like ones you can actually watch and enjoy. But
yeah,
it's because there really is like, yes, of course, the special needs like jokes are there, but they're not like so omnipresent that they get like grating. Mm-hmm. You know, they do make the jokes here and there, but Bobby's never like, he's never like ashamed, but he's always just kind of like aloof about everything. So he's almost like above them when it comes to that because he's like, okay, you said that, whatever. I don't give a shit. You know, I am who I am. Deal with it.
And I mean, like the biggest perpetrator, because he only has like a small scene, is the Big Show as Captain Insano.
Good old Paul White, the Big Show. What I love about that little performance, obviously, is when he starts laughing.
Yeah.
When they show him at the end of when he's laughing, he's like crying, like almost like, I can't stop laughing. Yeah. Please, someone help me. And that's why he's laughing so hard.
But I also love when Bobby just pokes a guy in the eyes and he just goes, Captain Insano, show no mercy.
Shows no mercy. That's right. That was hilarious. And then, yeah, just all the things that he visualizes, you know, like water sucks, you know, all that. It's so good. Just
and this
so
movie
good.
Would have been a lot worse if lesser actors had the roles that Henry Winkler and Kathy Bates have.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, those two roles, because you don't get much lesser than the rest of Sandler's crew.
But those two... And Farrah Zabalk.
Farrah Zabalk is so good. God, I mean, whatever happened to the age of movies where you can have a strangely attractive woman as like your romantic lead? Like she has the largest mouth and eyes you can really get and not have it be a cartoon character, you know? But she is like weirdly attractive. It's like, wow, it's like there's something going on here.
And for some reason, like the typecast for her romantic lead, it's like scarousal. She scares me and arouses me.
exactly. It's like, yeah, it's like that, but it's like along the lines of me with Alice in A League of Their Own when she's all bruised up. It's kind of like, well, I'm learning things today. You know? I am learning things about myself. Farrah Zabalk in this movie, I am learning things.
This was one of those movies where I was like, I am learning things.
I am learning things about myself today. This is fun.
That's like quality H2O.
That is, yeah, the glacier water. That's always cold, you know. But I do love how he had that like little like snap out cup, that little blue cup that he like flicks out and becomes a little like set of disc. It's a cup. I was like, oh, those things were around. I remember those.
Now, that's so Hubie Halloween is basically like, all right, we're gonna take Bobby Boucher and we're gonna make him the like the weird kind of I'm trying to make, what's it called when the people form like a watch group for a town?
Oh, neighborhood watch.
He's like the neighborhood watch guy that no one respects in Salem, Massachusetts.
Well, there, yeah, I'm not too far from Salem right now.
And he has like homeland. His little gadget things.
Yeah, I mean, I remember seeing that on Netflix and being like, oh, I'll try to watch this. And somebody I remember hearing was like, it's not terrible. You know?
Well, it's basically, it doesn't take itself seriously at all. And it's like a look back at Adam Sandler's past movies and was just like, let's do that again. And I mean, like Ben Stiller as the guy in in Happy Gilmore, he shows up in it.
Oh yeah, now your back's gonna hurt because you just pulled landscaping duty.
Easily the best character in an Adam Sandler movie ever.
He's so good. That and the clown in Billy Madison.
Yeah. Hey, I think I just killed that Mista lady.
That's right. Yeah.
Or but, actually. The bus driver, Billy Madison.
Yeah.
Me and Chris her Farley. It on. No, he didn't. No, he didn't. My friend and her totally. No, they didn't. No. But you can imagine if they did.
I love the look that Sandler gives. I'm like, uh-huh, yeah. Like he's like smiling and he just kind of walks away.
That Sasquatch ate all of them.
I'll tell you who it was. It was that damn Sasquatch.
But, that is correct.
Right. So it's like that's when Sandler could be goofy as hell and still be like funny.
Yeah.
But like, cause that's what the 90s were. Like that was the perfect time to be doing that.
And it's also like Sandler's humor worked well in that time. And we weren't tired of it yet.
Right. Right. Because it was new. It was like fresh.
Like Opera Man on SNL realistically is not very funny, but he is one of the more iconic original characters. And it's very much just Sandler singing fucking gibberish.
Yeah. It's such a goofy premise, which is what like the Waterboy actually is. But the Waterboy is essentially Rudy if he wasn't obsessed with becoming a football player.
Yeah,
you know, it's exactly what that is.
And if he had any talent at football.
Yeah, and if he could actually play the sport instead of being a little shit.
That's I was watching an ESPN show a little while ago and they were doing what fictional football character are you going to draft first overall? And the options were like Bobby Boucher, Johnny Utah. And I forget the other two.
Johnny Utah, a.k.a. Shane Falco.
Yeah.
Well, the other one's got to be, I mean, personally, I would put Latimer from the program on there.
He might have been.
He's a monster. But, of course, you know, he's on steroids, so you can't drug test the man. But then, of course, there's Tweeter. Tweeter's not bad. You know, from Varsity Blues. Got Jonathan Mogg. Got John Moxon, you know. But he's not terrible.
But yeah, they picked four. It was like three of them were quarterbacks, and then you had there were two quarterbacks and then two defensive players. And one of the quarterbacks was Johnny Utah, and one of the defensive players was Bobby Boucher. And I think they ended up saying Bobby Boucher because his first step was wicked and he plays with power and aggression.
He does. You know, you absolutely want that man on the other side. Yeah,
and Johnny Utah, they're like, we didn't actually get to see him play that much. And he has a busted knee. Well, so do we really want to use the first overall pick on him?
Well, is the game being played on a beach? Because then that's why you have Johnny Utah playing. But if it's being played on an actual football field, pretty much anybody else. But yeah, I mean, well, that's it. That is interesting because that's the other thing with football movies. Baseball movies, you're usually talking about the team. Mm-hmm. Football movies, most of the time your main character is your quarterback.
Yeah.
And this time it's a linebacker. And
the quarterback's a total dick. Like, you're not supposed to like him for 90% of this movie, and then he comes in and apologizes at the end.
Exactly. And that's the thing. Like, has there
The opposite, the enemy quarterback is not even like, he doesn't even have screen time, does he?
No, because the other one's a defensive player. Mm-hmm. But usually the dick, or quote unquote the bad guy, is either the coach and the opposing defensive linebacker, or a lineman of some kind. They're never like, you never see anything from the kicker's point of view, you know, who, arguably speaking, from what you hear from football players, the punters and the kickers on the team are the complete psychopaths of the team. So you would want to see a story involving those people and how they became the nut jobs that they are,
the replacements.
Of course, which is a good segue. I think we should get into that movie. So Mike, how's your beer going?
Doing good. I'm just about done my second one. Yeah, if we're moving through these movies kind of quick, otherwise I feel like I might have finished a six pack if I cared to.
I feel like that's partially me to blame, because I have, like, in the back of my head, even though I have headphones in for the first time, in the back of my head I'm thinking, like, there's somebody on the other side of my wall just going, what the fuck is that guy talking about?
But also, like, how much is there actually to discuss about The Waterboy?
I mean,
like, it's a funny movie. It has its issues, but you're talking more about Sandler than the movie itself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And of course, with Rudy, I think for Rudy, you only fall into one of two camps. You either love that movie or you fucking hate it. And for me, I fucking hate it. And there's no reason to want to be talking about it. So
as me, I'm just very indifferent. Like,
right.
I don't like the movie by any means, but I don't have that much to say about it.
Which makes it, a little difficult to talk about when you're not doing like a just recapping the movie and making fun of it, like kind of podcast. So why don't we get to The Replacements?
This movie, I could rewatch this movie endlessly.
It's one of my it's one of my wife's favorite though. Kara loves it as well, and she watched, because again, okay, so now we'll get into it. I also watched Necessary Roughness from
1991. And I did as well.
Because I texted you the second I started watching it. I was like, dude, you need to watch this movie. It is The Replacements, but nine years earlier. Now, Necessary Roughness, for those who do not know, is Scott Bakula. He plays Paul Blake. He is a quarterback, a former ex-high school quarterback who didn't go to college because his dad died and he had to take over the family farm. Now, at MSU, which is essentially, it's not MSU. It's like North Texas State or something like that, or whatever. But it's essentially Michigan State is what it looks like. Now, they had a scandal where all of their all-star players, their actual varsity players, all were caught cheating and doing various things like the program would really get into. But so they all had to be fired, and the whole new team of, now I'm going to use a word that we'll be using a lot, replacement players had to be used to fill out this team. Now, these are all a ragtag bunch of guys that have played football once or twice in their life, blah, 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 blah. There's various different stereotypes, all of these things. Now, Paul Blake has to come back as a mid-30s, almost 40-year-old man to play quarterback. Kathy Ireland, they need a kicker, so they recruit Kathy Ireland, who is on the soccer team, to be the kicker. There is a large Asian man as the center. He's Samoan, but there's also, it's close, but there's a soccer player kicker. There is a psychopath linebacker. There are two twins or two very close, similar looking people that are offensive linemen. These are two large white guys in this. Now, the coach of the team is Hector Elizondo. He has to come out of retirement to become the coach of this team. And he gets to coach things on his own terms. So he gets full control.
I love Hector Elizondo as the coach.
He's good. But you can see what I'm going in here, because then when I start to describe The Replacements, I could literally say all of the exact same words I just said, except replace Scott Bakula with Keanu Reeves. Replace Kathy Ireland with Reese Ifans. And then you have the two, Faison Love and the other guy, which are the two large black linemen. You know, it is the same movie, except instead of Dr. Elizondo as the new coach, you get Gene Hackman as the coach who gets to do whatever. And instead of Robert Loggia as the assistant coach in Necessary Roughness, you have a rando. You know, you have like two randos.
But you have they both Jack also Ward. Have convict football players.
Exactly. But only in the replacements, the convict football player, and we will talk about Michael Jace a little bit because, Mike, are you familiar with Michael Jace's actual life?
No.
Okay, we'll get to it because he is also from New Jersey as well. So he's one of the hometown boys, although I don't think we should be claiming credit for him given what I'm going to say about him.
Now, did you look at who plays some of the convict football players?
Yeah, it's Dick Butkus.
You have Evander Holyfield, Jim Kelly, Jerry Rice, Herschel Walker, Randy White.
Well, that's the thing, though. The funniest part is they get Evander Holyfield, who is a famous boxer.
Tony Dorsett.
Right. All of the other guys are all famous NFL players, most of them Hall of Famers.
Earl Campbell.
Yeah, they're mostly Hall of Famers. Dick Butkus. Yeah, they could have gotten Bo Jackson to play that role, but for some reason they did not.
And like these are players in their prime. Like this is Jerry Rice in the middle of winning Super Bowls with San Francisco. Yeah.
And this is Jim Kelly just before he lost four Super Bowls. Yeah, it's all there, and it's insane. But the only difference between these two teams is obviously replacements is professional football, mm-hmm. and the Necessary Roughness is college football, and the inmates are the other team that the college team in Necessary Roughness has to have a scrimmage against. Whereas Michael Jace is literally on the team as in the replacements. He is Ray Smith, I believe, when his real name is Earl Wilkins, I think. But his playing name is Ray Smith because he's just been a resident of the state of Washington or something like that, the county of Washington, the district of Washington, D.C. or whatever.
Now, I will say the difference. So the Samoan offensive lineman in Necessary Roughness and the sumo wrestler offensive lineman in the replacements play different positions on the offensive line. The Samoan is the center. The sumo wrestler is an offensive tackle.
He's a tackle. That's right. Yeah, yeah. And of course, you know, Necessary Roughness, there's no deaf kid. You know, there's no deaf, no deaf.
And there's a bar fight in both movies.
Started after the quarterback tries to defuse the situation, you know, and then of course and that's the thing. There's always some sort of fight that bonds the ragtag football team, you know. But yeah, there's a fight. There's the whole scene, like the whole beginning of the movie plays out the same way as well. In the beginning of Necessary Roughness, Paul Blake is farming and he finds a football and he throws it at a scarecrow that's dressed up as a football player. Mm-hmm. So he's doing his post-football job, but incorporating football somehow. Shane Falco, Keanu Reeves, our greatest living actor, is scraping barnacles off a boat when he finds his, you know, All-American whatever trophy. It's got a football figure on the top. So he pulls it off and he pretends to throw a pass underwater. You know, it's the same opening scene. And then we get to the reason why we need replacement players, which happens at the same time in both movies. And then we get the retired coach coming out of retirement to control the team on his terms. And it's all the same movie.
And now, getting into the replacements.
Which is objectively the better one, or the better of the two. It is.
Everyone on the team is a scab. They're all scabs.
They're all scabs. Every single one of them. Yeah. And then
this movie is very anti-union.
Did you see who the head of the players union is, though?
No.
It's Keith David. Oh, man. Keith David is in two scenes of this movie, and I couldn't remember it. When he popped up, I was like, holy shit, it's Keith fucking David. What are we doing here? He's barely in this movie.
Now, I am surprised that the early... Actually, I'm trying to think when it would have been more like cliche or whatever to have the girl is trying out for the football team.
In the 90s, early 90s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This movie does not have that.
Right, of course. Yeah. Because
now, one thing I will say about Necessary Roughness is I do like that she ends up with the center.
She goes ends up with center. Manu, yes, who is... who is weirdly like obsessed with her and protecting her and all that. And of course, he kicks everyone out of the shower so she can take a shower, and he guards the door so none of these animals, even though everyone knows on the team that he's probably the biggest threat to her at the moment because he's so obsessed with her. But yeah,
it's, hey, at least he seems like a decent guy.
Of course, yeah, he's a nice guy. That's what he is. But yeah, there's so much going on, and of course, in The Replacements, we have Keanu's love interest, who is the head of the cheerleading team of the cheerleading squad. She also runs a bar, and she's one of these stock football movie characters that a woman usually plays, where it's a woman who knows her football stuff. You know, she knows everything about the team and when, you know, certain wide receiver do this or tackles, blah, blah, blah. She knows a lot more about football than the players or coaches themselves, you know? And it's a weird football movie. It's a weird cliche that really only happens in football movies.
She hired strippers to be the cheerleaders.
You want to talk about the greatest decision anyone can make in a football game? You know, it's, yes, that's exactly what you do, you know? But then, of course, you know, it's perfect for the situation because replacement players wouldn't have the focus that professionals probably would have, you know? Whereas that's what we find out the Dallas game, that shit doesn't really work on Dallas at the end, you know?
And now, well, yeah, because that's when a player actually comes in. Now, that's when the real players actually end up breaking the line.
Yeah, all of Dallas
crossed
by the end.
Now, that does raise the question with the replacements. If every team is dealing with needing to replace players, it's ragtag versus ragtag at that point, is it not? Like,
it is, yeah. But they do kind of mention, like, offhand that some players here and there are coming back. Mm-hmm. So, like, there's always, like, one good player on the other team when they play them. But, yeah, they do. But that's the thing. Like, in this game, in the replacements, every game they play has guys, like, upending dudes, helmet-to-helmet tackles. They're getting kicked in the chest. These are all things that would be penalized and people would be thrown out of games for, you know? It's like the NFL may have been pretty lax in 2000, but they weren't that lax, you know?
Maybe they're like, ah, this is a replacement year, so fuck it. Let's see what we can do.
Who gives a shit about the rules? Let's let them kill each other. Who cares?
Now, I love Gene Hackman in this movie, though.
He's good, but it's so funny because you can tell that he's giving about 45%.
Yeah. Clearly. And it's kind of funny that Keanu is... I hesitate to call him a straight man, but he's kind of the straight man on the team.
He's essentially... He's Johnny Utah, except without being an FBI agent, you know? It's the same character. They might as well, like, see, I've always argued that they might as well have just made this character Johnny Utah, you know? What's the harm that it could have done, you know? People are like, wait, it's a sort of Point Break sequel.
Yeah, bringing up Johnny Utah, that does raise the question of why would you pick the person that people recognize that played in a national championship game as your undercover agent and use his real name, his easily look upable real name.
And that's the thing. Bodie in that movie immediately recognizes
him.
Immediately. Just like everyone immediately recognizes Shane Falco, you know? And that's one of the better lines in this movie where, like, everybody recognized him and he's like, geez, didn't anybody have anything better to do that day? But there's also the things in this movie where it's like, of course it's a comedy, so you gotta let some shit slide, but like, apparently you can be an NFL player, openly shoot someone's car multiple times in public, firing a weapon in public, and nothing will happen to you except your coach will say, okay, just turn in your firearms, no questions asked, you know? We're not gonna bother.
Good news for you, Plexico Barris.
Well, if anything, in that case, it'd be like, all right, just give me the gun so you don't fucking shoot your other foot. You know? Dumbass.
Up next, fireworks. Talking to you, JPP.
Right. Here, when you light it, throw it. How about that? Don't just hold on to it, you moron. But yeah, and of course, in this one, there's also the Shane, because Martell is the... he's the stud professional quarterback that comes back and crosses the line at the end. So he's the asshole villain. Mm-hmm. It becomes a quarterback at the end. So that's why Keanu misses the first half of the final game. And of course he comes back at halftime because they're losing and Martell sucks. Everybody hates him. And so Keanu has to save the day. It's the big cliche that every, like we said, every football movie has.
Now this movie did steal a scene from the Little Giants. This is the only week we're not talking about a kids sports movie involving sports. True. The Little Giants probably would have been the pick if we did pick a kids football movie.
I think it's the only one.
Yeah, I think it is the only one.
But actually, it's not, because last week we didn't talk about Angels in the Outfield. Mm-hmm. There is a sequel to Angels in the Outfield called Angels in the End Zone, and it is a football version of Angels in the Outfield.
Now, the little in this, he has the scene where he puts the sticky stuff on the guy's hands. Now, in the NFL now, they just wear the gloves.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and coach, I look like I jacked off an elephant.
Yeah. But in the Little Giants, there is a speedster kid on the team that cannot catch. And he puts that stuff on his hands. And on his way to the huddle, he pounds his chest, and then he can't get his hands off his chest.
That's the other cliche in football comedies. There's always the guy that can't catch, but he's the fastest guy on the team.
Yeah.
And that's the thing with Necessary Roughness and this. What is the first thing we see happen with Paul Blake when Scott Bakula throws a ball the first official time of practice? He overthrows the fastest guy on the team.
Yeah.
What does Shane Black do in this movie, or Shane Falco do in this movie when he throws the ball the first time? He overthrows the fastest guy on the team. The only difference is that Orlando Jones runs face first into a lineman, whereas the guy from he's from the program in Necessary Roughness, whereas he barely misses the ball. He's just overthrown by a couple steps.
So one of the things from Necessary Roughness, since we keep bringing it up, that Sinbad's line where he's like, I don't eat meat, I'm a vegetarian.
Sinbad is so good in that movie.
And it's... Hector Elizondo just goes, you can eat whatever you want.
Well, that's the thing. He's like, Sinbad's like criminally underused in that movie.
Yeah.
But, and that's the thing the Replacements gets right. Everybody in this movie is used really well. Like, they're used very well. And, okay, so speaking of people being used in this movie, now we have Jack Warden, who is the Robert Loggia analog. They even have the two gruff voices, but he's more of the owner of the team in the Replacements, as opposed to Loggia, who's just the defensive coach. Now, Jack Warden is from Newark, New Jersey. Now, also, like we mentioned before, there is a man on this team in this movie. His name is Michael Jace. He's the convict on the Replacements, the Washington Sentinels. He is from Paterson, New Jersey. Now, Mike, again, I ask you again, in case you have time to Google it, do you know the real story with Michael Jace, the actor?
No, I don't.
He murdered his wife. He is now a literal convict. And he did it pretty horrifyingly. And so that man who played a convict football player in this movie is now an actual convicted murderer. And so it's like when you watch this movie now, you're like, oh no, you know, this is not aged well. this is no longer that funny. You know?
That's like the Cosby Show episode where Bill Cosby is talking about his barbecue sauce that
does a certain thing
to
yeah, and his bit in his stand-up about Spanish Fly is like, oh no, this was just a warning. He was telling us something.
He was not hiding the fact what he was doing here.
He was literally telling us what he was doing. But like Michael Jace, it's like, okay, you know, because this guy had a bit of a little tiny career. Like he was in The Great White Hype and all that. But then of course, you know, you do something horrific like murder your wife, you can't be in movies anymore because they will throw you in jail.
Yeah.
But so it is kind of weird, like seeing that, you know, a lot of people in the movies, you're like, oh, they're dead, or they just stopped acting. This guy literally got thrown in jail.
Now, we haven't talked about my two favorite players in The Replacements yet. Very much. We've brought them up. And it's John Favreau and Reese Iphens.
Yeah, Favreau and Iphens. Yeah, Favreau is a SWAT team cop who is recruited to be the crazy linebacker.
Well, and that's the thing. So
Bateman, his name is Bateman,
which is funny. I actually went to school with a guy named Bateman.
But is his name Patrick Bateman in this?
I'm not sure.
I think it's something close. He's just credited as Bateman. But
I like that he's kind of mild-mannered until violence is on the table. Then he goes into berserker mode.
Well, yeah, when he's put on a field, he's a complete psychopath. Daniel
like,
Bateman.
When he's just
Daniel
like talking
Bateman.
To someone, it's like he's kind of mild-mannered. And then he's like Get me the football. I need that football.
You need the ball. And that had to have been, like, if you ask Jon Favreau, like, what are the highlights of your career? It's like, first one, directing Iron Man, you know, and making billions of dollars. Two, being in Swingers and, like, getting my start in Hollywood. Three,
The Mandalorian has to be in.
Well, yeah, but, like, up there. But, like, I wonder if in his top five is, like, yelling in Gene Hackman's face in The Replacements, you know?
Now, I find it so funny that, what, less than 3 years later, he goes from this role to directing The Elf.
Exactly, exactly. You know, and this is, you know, he's already done Swingers. He already done Maid. He done.
He's one of the most talented guys in Hollywood, I will say.
He done Rudy, you know, all that stuff. So he was definitely, you know, on the way to being a director. But it's so funny that most of his scenes involve him screaming in Gene Hackman's face.
Now imagine he took this character and just implemented it as his character is Happy in the Iron Man movies.
Just have Happy be a complete unhinged psychopath. That would make more sense to have him as an actual bodyguard to a superhero, as opposed to being a guy who's just a big guy who gets Burger King.
Well, I mean, like, well, in the comics, Happy used to be a professional boxer, didn't he?
Yeah, he's got like, it's like the one scene in Iron Man 2 that actually,
where he's like boxing. He's like, that's called dirty boxing.
Yeah, it's like he actually makes sense for his character where he actually does box a little bit. But yeah, it's. This movie, and of course, this movie also has one of the biggest sports movies cliches, and it's usually done and played the most in football, but it's sports movies cliches of the love interest at first saying, I don't date, insert your sport here, players. So in this one, it's,
I don't date golfers. That's great because I'm a hockey player.
Exactly. That's Sandler. You know, it's the best tournament. But in this one, it's, of course, I don't date football players. In Necessary Roughness, it's I don't date football players. And, you know, it's everything, you know. And even in Major League, they don't explicitly say I don't date baseball players, but it's very much the I don't do this because, you know, baseball players are nuts kind of thing. But it's. That is very much a sports movie trope as well.
Now, one kind of anti-trope, I'll say, like a bit of a change of expectations, is I like the ending when it's the voiceover. It's like, yeah, none of these players got deals. None of them even played football again. But this brought them together. Like, no, it's not like, oh, they went on to be professional football players or anything.
Yeah, their lives were changed forever, and they became the pros that they always wanted to be. You know, it's like, no. And it's also weird that Hackman suddenly gives narration at the end of this movie. He hasn't been doing it at all before that.
Though I guess the Sandlot kind of does the same thing, where it's like, only Benny became a professional player, and he was a pinch runner. So, like, how good of a professional player was he?
Exactly. Yeah, everybody else the narration at the end of the Sandlot, everybody else is kind of like, and everybody else just kind of faded away. This guy was killed in a gunfight. This guy went to Vietnam and never seen again. You know, it's like all that. It's like, oh, that's kind of fucked up. Yeah. You know,
I'm pretty sure they based I think they based his ending off of River Phoenix.
Yeah. He died outside the Viper Room. You know, but that's all right. All right, so we've talked about Necessary Roughness and Replacements.
Well, wait, we still haven't really talked about Rhys Ifans that much.
Well, that's the thing, because he's obviously the soccer player recruited to be the kicker, like Kathy Ireland, but he's got this weird, like, he's wanted by like the British mafia.
Yeah. it was the British mafia money or something. Because right, he has a gambling addiction.
And what cracks me up is at the end, before he has to, Shane Falco changes the play on him to keep to save his ass from missing or making a field goal that would have cost him money or gotten him his killed or whatever.
It would have cost him his bar, I think.
Right, right. So they show him looking in the stands at the three British toughs. Now, for one, there are various different movies where like British, mostly Guy Ritchie movies, where British guys are tough guys, and it's like, it's just not believable, you know, as like Americans, like growing up with mafia movies, like American mafia movies, it's like, these guys are tough guys, like these guys will fucking
listen, unless it's Jason Statham up there, I don't want it.
Exactly.
It's like, which is funny, because Guy Ritchie movies, Jason Statham is often the guy getting intimidated by the British tough guys.
Right, exactly. But with this one, what my favorite thing is the one old guy in like the velour tracksuit who's like filing his nails at one point. It's like, that's not tough. That is not fucking scary. What are you doing? You know? It's like, wait, wait, we went with that take? Seriously?
It's funny that more than one person involved in the main cast owns a bar. Like,
yes, that's right. That's right. And because, and also, you know that were he not scraping barnacles off of people's boats, that's what Shane Falco would be doing. He'd be running a sports bar, you know? But
yeah, it might be not realistic to not have more players owning bars.
Yeah, because that's kind of like the first thing you do. Either you go into commentating or you own sports bars. You know, that's
you coach, you own a sports bar, or you go into commentating.
Right. Yeah. So like,
or you can do all three if you're successful enough.
Yeah, if you
marry Bradshaw.
Yeah, right. You get a chain of them. But all right, so we talked about our three official movies. So now we can discuss The Program versus Varsity Blues. Because they're the same movie again, like Necessary Roughness and Replacements. But The Program is one of my favorite football movies. Might be my favorite football movie of all time. Simply for how ridiculous it is and how serious it takes itself with how stupid it is. But that movie, as I remember when it came out, it was controversial because Joe Kane, who was the quarterback, he's a star quarterback, he's a Heisman candidate, all that, but he can't handle the pressure, so he goes out and does reckless shit because he's also he's an alcoholic, that kind of thing. So what he does at one point is he lays down in the middle of the highway while traffic's blazing by him, and it's kind of like, you know, he's getting his rush and all that. Well, that scene got cut out of the movie because some idiot kid did it once, and that means every kid everywhere did it.
Did you ever see the Key and Peele sketch where it's like a two inspirational post sports speech, and he's like, "You can fly, I can fly." He's like, "You can go off and jump off your roofs and literally fly." And then they show him on camera. He's like, "My comments were." I misinterpreted the word literally. I thought I meant figuratively.
Right.
He's like, it was irresponsible.
And that's the thing with this movie. Like again, like one kid did it and got hurt. So that, of course, with the media means every kid everywhere was doing it because The Program made a bunch of money. But it wasn't like Jurassic Park money, you know, it made a good amount of money, but it was like, it was because one, it was such a controversial scene. So the scene is cut out of the movie, but instead there's one where he's in like a shipping yard on a date with Christy Swanson and he stands in front of a train and dumb jumps out at the end at the last second. But that movie and Varsity Blues are essentially the same because they're both talking about like how cliche and corrupt it is to have a football team where football is the end all be all and everyone does everything to make sure the football team are allowed to do whatever they want. There's a scene in The Program with Latimer he was on the practice squad before, but then over the summer he hit the weights. On the offseason, he hit the weights and the steroids, and he is jacked now, and he's one of the best linebackers they've ever seen, but it's, of course, it's because of the steroids. Now, he's played by Andrew Brzezinski, and you may not know the name, but you know the actor. In Batman Returns, he is Christopher Walken's son. He's his son, Chip. He's also the man behind the mask in the new leather, and when they their most recent Leatherface movies. And he has a great story arc, because his arc is, I wasn't good enough to play, so I found a way to be the best. And now in that movie, you show him dealing with steroids. He almost rapes a girl. He's sat down and he's suspended from the team for 3 games after the rape. And the girl is talked to about how important it would be if she didn't press charges. And then he even says, he's like, 3 games? Why so much? What? You fucking tried to rape a girl, you know? It's like, what's the matter with you? Why so many? It's like, but that's the thing with these movies. They treat football and the playing of football as the most important thing ever.
Varsity Blues does it in a bit more realistic of a manner.
I would argue that the program does it too, because I guarantee you there are guys at like Florida State, which is what ESU essentially is in the program. You're supposed to be Florida State, same colors and everything. Like, it's Florida State. Nebraska had a big controversy about, you know, players not even having to go to class and like we're getting their grades, you know, fixed and all that. So Division I football, I guarantee you.
Oh yeah.
There nowadays, though, it might be a little harder for them to get away with it.
Steroids, I'm not entirely sure. The personality and grades are still very much a thing.
Right, and the attempted rapes, that kind of thing. But the attempted rapes, I'm willing to bet, are much more more reported, I guess I'll say. And they're probably taken farther.
Again, I don't know the full story with it, but Jameis Winston, apparently.
Florida State.
Yeah.
but that's the thing. That's something that's haunted him his entire career. Mm-hmm. Granted, he may have, quote unquote, gotten away with it, but it's been haunted. It's haunted.
Ben Roethlisberger.
Exactly. Haunted him his entire career.
And then with the whole why so many suspensions, you get to the Ray Rice situation where he got a 2-game suspension when there was a videotape of him cold clocking.
There is actual proof that he assaulted a woman, and all he gets is a 2-game suspension.
Well, and then he got ran out of the league after that. But only after there was backlash against the NFL.
Exactly. And that's the thing. It's almost like only apologize when you get caught. And it's basically you're apologizing because you got caught. But that's the thing with the program. There's so much in this movie that just shows the backroom dealings that these programs go to keep their players on the field. And the NFL does the same damn thing. But with Texas football in Varsity Blues, it's almost like the MTV version of it, where it's sort of serious, but mostly played for comedic effect. Like, the whole wieners on the glass at the Alamo Club, like that, or tweeter stealing a fucking cop car, you know? Are you serious?
Now, did you see the other connection from the program in Varsity Blues? We got a family connection.
Oh, I was going to say, is it the fact that the star player shatters his leg in a pivotal moment of the movie?
No, it's a... an actor, family connection.
Is it
James Caan and Scott Caan?
That's right, James Caan, Scott Caan. That's right. Yeah, it was. I was blanking on that, but yeah, James Caan is the coach of the program, and Scott Caan is obviously Tweeter. But yeah, it's
and Paul. We bring up Paul Walker is Lance Harbor.
Paul Walker, yeah, and that's even in. Even in the program, there's Omar Epps. Omar Epps' character has a full character arc where he is the rookie that was recruited to play for the school, and he goes after Halle Berry. And now Halle Berry is the girlfriend of the starting quarter of the starting tailback and all that. But his whole thing is that he's a black man from the quote unquote ghetto, and it's football is his way out. Mm-hmm. But so you kind of get the little race thing there, but he's not, as we find out in Varsity Blues, Kilmer's black workhorse. Like, that's not the character for him. But it's still a black running back who has to play football to get out of the situation. It's like, okay, the necessary roughness and the replacements, it's almost comedic how exactly the same they are. With the program and Varsity Blues, it's like someone saw the program and was like, hey, guess what? We got to sell this to 18-year-old kids in MTV generation. Let's change it up a bit.
Yeah, so instead of a black player playing to get out of the situation, you have Ali Larder, who's dating a football player to get out of the situation.
Yeah, and that's the thing with the program that Varsity Blues does, because of course you had to have some TNA and Varsity Blues, so you get the whipped cream bikini scene. In the program, is that movie, that's the perfect movie for that kind of scene, because you know that some coach somewhere be like, here, go do this to recruit this player to play for our team. Like, you know, Omar Epps would be seeing that at some point.
Now, I can't confirm that this happened, but I did hear stories that at a certain university that I went to, I'm not going to say the name, when they were trying to recruit players and they came up for practices or whatever, the coaches would take them to parties, 17-year-old players to parties. Like, they would drop them off at frat parties or something.
Yep. And that's the thing. In the beginning, like, they make it a point to show that the recruiting hoops that they jump to in the program to get Omar Epps at ESU, they bring him to a campus visit where the entire cheerleading squad meets him and they're chanting his name. There's a whole, chant for him and all that. Just like, hey, look how great you are. When he shows up the first day on campus, there's none of that shit. And it's just Joe Kane. And, oh, by the way, there's also the redneck linebacker or the redneck lineman, the offensive lineman, who is – his name is Bud Light. It's his nickname in the program. And, of course, there's Billy Bob on Varsity Blues. But they meet him when he gets off the bus. And Mo Morales' first word is, he's like, what happened to all the cheerleaders and the dancing girls and all that? He's like, yeah, now you're here. So you're just another freshman. It's like, you don't mean shit.
Yeah.
It's like, congrats. We got you here, sucker. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because, like, the recruiting techniques are real. Now, what I said, I only heard about what I said. I did not witness it or anything. Right. But I'm sure that it happens.
But, right, and the school you went to wasn't of, like, a Florida State, Penn yeah. State level. It was a much smaller school, so you can only imagine.
And it was it is D1, but it's, like, right. The lowest class of D1.
Like, D1A, yeah, but it's... Yeah. But you can only imagine what's going on at, like, the USC's, the Texas.
Oh, my God.
Like, Alabama's. Like,
Ole Miss.
Yeah, just all of those, like, the big football schools. And, like, all the shenanigans and horrible shit that goes on behind the scenes to keep these guys on the field because their futures are at stake. It's like, yeah, there's 10 raped girls at a party. But, no, let's worry about whether or not the running back can stay on the field.
Yeah, what's his name? The fucking swimmer. What's that? The fucking
swimmer.
Oh,
yeah, that cocksucker that was, like Ohio State or something.
That got caught red-handed, and they were like, let's let him off because he's a good swimmer.
Yeah, his name for one was like Brock, like, you know, a rapist name. Yeah. And then he was like raping a girl behind like a passed out girl behind a dumpster. Yeah, and it's like,
and he got caught red-handed by a couple of other guys. Like, right. This wasn't like an alleged thing. Like, it was, he got caught.
He got caught. There was proof. And people were like, this fucking asshole did this. And it was kind of like, no, but he's got such a bright future. It's like, well, yeah, guess what? He squandered it. You know, he fucking ruined it. But that's the thing, like football movies, that when they do focus on those subjects, it's weird because they don't ever go the distance of actually ruining the kids' lives and showing that hopefully what would be like the wish fulfillment. They unfortunately show what most of the time is what actually happens, where it's this kid gets to play some football some more and just gets away with whatever it is.
And now that raises the question, what would make it a better movie, the wish fulfillment or, you know, actually portraying this? Because I'm going to say, Game of Thrones, once it started going with wish fulfillment, people started saying it was shit.
Well, and that's the thing. And that's why one of my favorite, like I said, one of my favorite football movies is The Program. Because Latimer, though he is not our main character of Joe Kane, he's one of the supporting ones. He has the best story arc because at one point Khan finds out that he's doing the steroids and he has to kick, and it's after the rape because it's the roid rage and all that. So he tells me he has to clean up. He misses his 3 games. He has to stay clean and he has to play clean because he's going to watch him piss in a cup and he's going to make sure he plays clean. But at one point he does this like weird urine transfusion from this guy to get clean urine pumped into his bladder so he can pass his piss test with clean urine the next day in front of Khan. But then, so he's on steroids. He has jumped back into steroids. He's fallen off the wagon, whatever. So he plays the final game of steroids. He's got like this crazy skull makeup on his face. They win the game. Everyone's happy. Everyone goes off crazy. But he is crying because James Caan looked him in the eyes after a big play, saw that they were bloodshot and like steroided. And they both have this look on their face like, I understand that you did roids. Latimer's like, I understand that you know I did roids. And so then he, the last shot that he has in the movie is he's on the bench crying with his head in his hands. And he looks up and he's got this look like of, I let myself down, I let my coach down because I did steroids again. But the whole thing is completely undercut by the fact that he's wearing skull makeup. And it's like dripping off his face like a fucking Halloween costume. It's absolutely hilarious because it's such a serious moment that is so fucking funny. You can't help but laugh. That's why I love that movie so much. There's so many such like dramatic and like soap opera elements to it, but it's just so stupid.
Yeah. Oh God.
I think, unless you have anything else to say about some random football movies that we watched.
I mean, like, I give a list of football movies that we probably could have talked about that we didn't.
Right.
I'm going to say The Little Giants because you know I love my kids' sports movies.
That's true. You fucking love those movies, dude.
And I mean, them. The Little Giants, I'm like, I'm cool with. Like, I watched it as a kid. I do. It's a nostalgia movie, but it ain't on the same level as The Sandlot and certainly not on the same level as D2, The Mighty Ducks 2.
Apparently nothing is.
Nope. But Point Break is close.
That's right. Yeah, Point Break is close out there for every movie. But yeah, it's
and that's the thing. Are you implying The Mighty Ducks 2? I mean, I'm sorry, D2, The Mighty Ducks 2 is not up there for every movie. Cause I got news for you, buddy. You're wrong.
It is. So guess what? It is. But
by the way, I got a if it gets here on time, there's going to be a bit of a surprise for you come that episode.
You better be wearing like the giant Mighty Ducks head.
It's better.
Nice. Is it Emilio Estevez? Will he be our guest?
He won't be our guest, but it is involving Emilio Estevez.
All right. I was going to say, we have a special guest, Emilio Estevez. But yeah, that would be great. But anyway, before we get too deep in that, where can people find us on the internet, Mike?
All right, you can find us at Happy Hour Films Podcast on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, on Overcast, and like I think 5 other wherever you get your streaming from. You can also find us on social media at Happy Hour Films Podcast on Facebook and Instagram. Give us a like, give us a follow, comment, shoot us a message. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah. Absolutely. And as our sports month moves on, we're going to be talking next week, as we've alluded to previous times, we're going to be talking about hockey. And so we're going to talk about D2.
Talking about Mighty Ducks 1, but if you don't watch D2, come on, man. It's on Disney Plus. There's no excuses.
As I said, we'll probably talk about both.
We don't have to watch D3. No. We don't have to watch D3.
No, we're going to be talking about Mighty Ducks 1 and 2, I guess I'll say. And then we'll be talking about Slapshot, and we'll talk about Miracle, which, as I've stated on this podcast for this episode, I'm not a fan of the inspirational pull-at-your-heartstrings crap movies, so I may not enjoy Miracle.
I actually have a signed puck from the goalie of the Miracle on Ice team.
Oh, I thought you were going to say goalie of the Mighty Ducks. So Goldberg, did he?
I think he's in prison, isn't he?
I think he's out of prison and kind of rehabbing. But no, he has had serious drug problems, which we will get into next week more than likely. But next week will be our hockey week. And we'll start throwing our pads around and fighting each other and doing all kinds of silly shit.
People may ask, why aren't we doing a basketball week? And I'll tell you. Basketball should make movies we want to talk about more.
Yeah, right. We're going to talk about in 2 weeks the one that we should, that we do want to talk about. But because we're going to do a miscellaneous week. And I think we might have to revisit what we're going to talk about that week, Mike, because I think we're not quite excluding the international listeners, but we're talking about mostly American sports. And maybe we'll try to find a foreign sports movie of some kind that we can talk about. Like a soccer movie or a football movie or something like that, or cricket. There's big cricket movies, I think.
Rugby movie.
Yeah, we'll talk about something. We'll figure something out. But
we'll talk about the one lacrosse movie, even though that's not international. That's very much a Native American.
It's like the original American.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of the opposite of what we'd be going for that one. But all right. So until that time, next week we'll talk about some hockey. I have been Ross Bacon.
I've been Mike McGuigan.
And we'll see you guys next time. So long.